Wednesday, next Wednesday at 9 o'clock in the morning and again in the evening at 9:30 on BBC Radio 4.
On BBC Radio 4 Longwave and DAB Digital Radio, it's time now for the Daily Service, led by the Reverend Dr. Sam Wells. Meanwhile, here on BBC Radio 4 FM, it's time for our Book of the Week. And again, we are in Paris in the 1900s. So far, Picasso and Gertrude and Leo Stein have taken center stage. But another artist makes his presence known, in Montmartre, by Sou Rowe.
Henri Matisse showed only two works at the Salon d'Automne of October 1905. He had planned to submit one of his divisionist-influenced paintings of the port at Collioure. But on the way back to Paris, he had stopped off in his hometown of Boyang and shown the new work to his mother, who said, "That's not painting." Whereupon Matisse slashed the canvas with a knife, his clearest expression of frustration with divisionism, from which he now began to detach himself. In place of his view of the harbour, he showed La Fenêtre Ouverte. Matisse, however, was not satisfied with it. He wanted another piece to send to the exhibition, so with just a few days to spare, he dashed off a startling portrait of Amelie, wearing an elaborate multicoloured hat, heaped with fruit and flowers. Madame Matisse in a green hat. A livid green line on her forehead, just above her brows, emphasises her pallor. She swings around to face the viewer, as if to say, "Allô?" She is a participant in the subtly arresting drama of the picture, a defiant rather than alluring model. Shortly after the close of the exhibition, Matisse received a telegram. Leo Stein and his sister Gertrude were offering 300 francs for Madame Matisse in a green hat. Matisse was ready to rush out and accept their offer. Amelie persuaded him to hold his nerve and demand the full asking price. They did not have long to wait before Leo agreed to the purchase. In Montmartre that November, Leo Stein made another discovery, this time in Sago's old pharmacy gallery. Presumably aware that the Steins had just purchased a painting by Matisse, Sago asked the American if he had seen anything by a young Spanish artist, Pablo Picasso. Leo said he had seen the works of one young Catalan painter. Was Picasso like him? "No," replied Sago. "This is the real thing." The painting he brought out to show Leo was Picasso's depiction of a family of itinerant travellers seated on the ground with their chimpanzee. Leo purchased the picture. On Tuesday evenings, Picasso and his friends habitually walked all the way from Montmartre across the river to the Closerie des Lilas at the top of the Boulevard Saint-Michel. Weekly gatherings were run by symbolist poet Paul Faure. At the Closerie des Lilas one evening, Leo Stein finally met Picasso through art critic and dealer Henri-Pierre Rocher. Rocher took the Steins up through the lanes of Montmartre to the Bateau Lavoir to meet Picasso. He brought out some drawings to show them, and Leo noticed how closely he scrutinized his own work. He was surprised that there was anything left on the paper, so absorbing was his gaze. Gertrude thought he looked like a bootblack. Shortly afterwards, they invited him to dinner at 27 Rue de Fleurus, where she observed him more closely. She found him oddly seductive. Thin, dark, alive, with big pools of eyes and a violent, but not a rough way. At dinner, he picked up her bread, mistaking it for his. When she retrieved it and he protested, her laughter broke the ice. Picasso and Fernand now became regular guests at the Stein Saturday soirees, bringing with them various members of the motley crowd from the Bateau Lavoir. The dealer Ambroise Boillard also managed to secure an invitation. The inner circle was treated to a recitation of the artistic opinions of Leo, who barely moved from the armchair on which he lay, half reclining, his feet resting on a bookshelf, a position he considered excellent for the digestion and for orating. It was at around this time that Picasso had a brainwave. He asked Gertrude if she would be willing to sit for her portrait. Until she came to live with Leo in the Rue de Fleurus, Gertrude had shown no particular interest in painting. In late 1905, aged 31, her ambition was to write a novel. On her first day in Picasso's studio, she took her pose while Picasso sat very tight on his chair and very close to his canvas, and on a very small palette which was of a uniform brown-grey colour, mixed some more brown-grey, and the painting began. Towards the end of the afternoon, Michael and Sarah Stein arrived, anxious to see the result. Picasso had produced a sketch which excited them all. They begged him to leave it just as it was. "No," he replied. It would, in fact, be months before he was ready to show anyone the finished picture. For the rest of the autumn and on through the winter, almost every day Gertrude left her spacious apartment near the Jardin du Luxembourg, took a horse-drawn omnibus from Odéon as far as the Place Blanche, then climbed the steps up to the Bout to the Place Ravignon to sit for her portrait in the ramshackle disorder of the Bateau Lavoir. Sometimes Fernand entertained her with fables of La Fontaine, reading aloud in her musical voice, or Gertrude sat in silence. When there were just the two of them, she and Picasso talked. As an intellectual bohemian lesbian, with a knowledge of philosophy and psychology, she was, after all, unusual in his experience. As for Gertrude, she clearly indulged him, attracted not only by his obvious talent, but by his vivacity and boyish good looks. Furthermore, he was her discovery. Although Leo had initially brought Picasso's work to her attention, it was Gertrude who responded to the appeal of Picasso the man. At a time when the other Steins, including Leo, were still being swept away by Matisse. As she watched Picasso at work, Gertrude pondered on her own creative techniques. The possibility of freeing narrative from the constraints of plot fascinated her. "I began to play with words then. Picasso was painting my portrait at that time, and he and I used to talk this thing over endlessly." Winter wore on, and still the painting was not finished. Picasso's problem was the modelling of Gertrude's head. In December 1905, Kies van Dongen, his wife Goose, and their baby Dolly moved into a minuscule studio in the Bateau Lavoir. When van Dongen had expressed a wish to move into the Bateau Lavoir, Picasso arranged it for him. He got on very well with the Dutch painter, and Picasso loved Dolly. He played with her for hours, training her to be an acrobat by swinging her above his head. The relationship was reciprocal. The child adored Picasso and called him Tableau. Fernand whittled her a little doll from a piece of wood. Van Dongen tried to persuade Picasso to do some illustrations for L'Assiette au Beurre. Why not try something lucrative? But Fernand dissuaded him, saying she did not want him distracted from his art. Van Dongen's work had been shown for the past 2 years at Vollard's, the Salon des Indépendants and the Salon d'Automne. At the exhibitions, he had made the acquaintance of Derain and Vlaminck, who now came for the first time to the Bateau Lavoir. Picasso's circle began to broaden as artists continued to gather around him, attracted by his magnetic personality. The dark winter evenings they still whiled away, smoking opium, which had become a regular habit among the inhabitants of the Bateau Lavoir. Picasso got a little lamp and a marvellous amber-coloured bamboo pipe with the penetrating smell. And twice or three times a week they indulged in that wonderful oblivion when all sense of time and of oneself is lost. On Sunday mornings they went to the open-air market in the Place Saint-Pierre, one of Fernand's favourite outings. A bizarre assortment of merchandise would be spread out on the ground, strewn right to the edges of the pavements. It was here that Picasso acquired his famous, much-photographed red shirt with white spots, which he wore for years. In spring 1906, Matisse was exhibiting at both the Salon des Indépendants and the Galerie Drouet in the Faubourg Saint-Honoré. To the Salon, Matisse had submitted only one painting, Joie de la Vie, the large Arcadian work painted in couleur. With this painting, he caused a sensation, signalling his definitive departure from the conventions of illustrative art and a bold move towards abstraction. Finally, in spring 1906, came the long-anticipated meeting of Picasso and Matisse. They were introduced by the Steins, who took Matisse and his daughter Marguerite, now aged 10, to see the portrait of Gertrude. As they made their way up the hillside through the lanes of Montmartre, people stopped to stare at the curious-looking group, the tall, lanky, golden-haired brother and his stout, bohemian-looking sister, both dressed in brown corduroy and wearing their distinctive Grecian sandals designed by Isidore Duncan's brother Raymond and inspired by a frieze on a vase in the British Museum. Matisse was, of course, no stranger in Montmartre. His nickname around the Rue Lafitte was the Doctor, because of his gold-rimmed spectacles and the frock coat and neat cravat Amelie insisted he always wear in town. In Montmartre, he was not a popular figure. Since his success at the previous Salon d'Automne, posters warning artists of the hazardous effects of lead paint had been defaced by graffiti and now warned against the effects of Matisse, the work, it was assumed, of one of the Picasso band. At the Bateau Lavoir, the visitors were received by Picasso, Fernand, and a very large dog. Fernand felt herself in the presence of a lucid mind, precise, concise, and intelligent. She realized that he and Picasso were being pitched against each other as the two most promising painters of the time. As for what Picasso thought, "Matisse talks, talks," he told Leo Stein. "I can't talk, so I just said, oui, oui, oui." As personalities, they had nothing in common. Matisse would say, "as different as the North Pole is from the South Pole," when talking about the two of them.
Stella Gunne was reading from In Montmartre by Sue Rowe. The producer was Duncan Minchul. And tomorrow, Picasso paints in secret. But why? You can find out at the same time here on BBC Radio 4. Woman's Hour looks at why there's been an 80% drop in sex discrimination cases brought to tribunal last year. That's coming up in a couple of minutes after the news. In Business continues tomorrow night at 8:30. The subject, The Fast and the Furious. More details now from Peter Day.
For decades, Britain has been the global leader in racing car innovation, a niche industry with a huge following on the Formula One racetracks. Now the F1 specialists are flexing their muscles and trying to apply their pit stop expertise to re-engineer many other kinds of businesses entirely unrelated to motor racing. Get revved up in Business tomorrow evening at 8:30.